Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Bingham X Radio Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Moose Racing. Have you checked out the brand new Alpha One motocross gear from Moose Racing? Unbelievable stuff. I think the Alpha One stuff is actually originally sort of dedicated to off-road because they have those cool little holes that are purpose built in there. You don't have to cut up your jersey anymore. They have a hole for your hydration pack built into the jersey, which, as a vet rider, I might just start bringing that out onto the motocross track. And I have but only one of three different vet riders on this particular podcast. I am your host, Brad Gebhardt. With me on the line, a couple of guys that have probably been on more Bingham X Radio podcasts than anyone aside from myself. We'll start off with the DEI hire himself, Dave Drakes. How's it going?
What's up, buddy? How are you doing?
Not too bad, brother. How are things over at Cobra?
Things are going, man. We're clanking along pretty good, man. So, you know, just, one foot in front of the other, trusting the process.
100%. Yeah. Like, whatever. All the cliches. I might actually, like, this might be a first for the sport of motocross. I'm actually going double DEI for this week. I have a podcast with Jordan Bailey in the hopper. That thing's getting ready to rip. And then you're on, like, I'm set for the rest of the year. I don't have to have any more mochaccinos going on for the rest of the year.
But, you know, that's where all the talent comes from, dude. You get more of those guys on. I mean, between me and Bailey, you know how many championships we have? Amateur and, you know, and just like.
He has seven.
Just the speed. Yeah. So we've got seven between the two of us. So, I mean, how amazing is that?
And now, welcome to the show, Sean Hackley. No.
Dude, I love Hackley, dude. He's a man.
Absolute. Nobody talks to you like they've known you forever like Sean Hackley.
Oh, dude, yeah, 100%. I saw that.
First time Dallas I met Sean SX. Hackley, he's like, dude, how you doing? I'm like, I'd like to introduce myself because you don't know who I am.
he's a stud, dude.
Absolutely. And then also the third portion of our three-headed monster, he needs no introduction, but I have to give him one anyway because this is a podcast. He's the crush groove and the body making and the record breaking. He's Kyle Wolf. Kyle, how's it going?
It's going well, man. Ready to jump into this. It's been a long day on my end, but man, always good to talk some moto.
You didn't even think about curving that hat, huh? Nothing.
It doesn't want to curve.
Is that Dave's hat?
It's not Dave's hat.
Okay. I thought maybe you stole that from Dave's collection. I thought, like, if there's anyone on this podcast that wouldn't curve their hats, it's Dave.
Oh, my goodness. Dude, Kyle's got a style, dude.
I'm afraid if I curve it, it's going to look even more ridiculous.
Yeah. At least you're not tucking your ears in like Chad used to.
No, God, no. No.
Hell yeah. That was fucking electric. One day we're going to just do a podcast about how electric, like, the mid-2000s, like, moto apparel scene was with the One Industry hoodies and the flat brims and the flex fits and the, like...
And back when a
Racer X was as thick as my laptop.
Kyle, I miss those days, dude. Kyle, I miss those days, dude.
Every shoe company had.
It was such a simpler time back then.
It really was. Did you remember the sport was just... Oh, it just was super cool. And when you said One Industry's hoodie, dude,
good. I had the monster one with the claw on the front.
I know you had the monster one. Mm-hmm. Everybody and their mom had the blue Yami and a bunch of other ones, dude.
Hey, I think I remember seeing somebody at Bob's Cycle wearing a monster hoodie and a rock star hat. Oof. And it was like, I'm like, that's 2007, baby.
This isn't 2000s, but I have to bring this up since we're talking about all this. So last year at Daytona, I saw a guy wearing a Mike Kudrowski Honda of Troy jersey.
Okay.
That 98. As rare as it gets. Yeah. I saw somebody in Nashville this
number
year.
Number
100?
100. Yeah.
And then in Nashville this year, I saw somebody walking around the pits in a set of LBZ pants.
Was it Daniel Blair?
It wasn't Blair.
The big baggy?
Yes.
What?
Yeah. LBZ.
With the rhinestone belt?
No rhinestone belt.
Oh, that I remember 2004 Minneapolis Supercross, Daniel Blair, and I believe his brother. I think they were teammates. They're on matching Yamaha four strokes.
More than Daniel did.
Yes. But yeah, they had the over the boot pants and the bagginess. And yeah, it was like, and that's like mid 2000s. Like,
yeah,
that's like, someone wearing bell bottoms in like 1984. Like the time had gone by, but, boys, we needed to have this podcast mainly because I commit myself to doing one every single week, but also, we are on the backside of, Jason Wygant's been saying it all week, and I agree. It's the greatest story in motocross history. Mm. Ken Roczen comes over here, from Europe, from Germany, after, dominating over in Europe and the GPs for many years, as a young rider. He's been on Suzuki almost his entire life. He's been with Fox his entire, I think the oldest picture you have that he's not wearing Fox. He's on like a 65 or something along those lines. And maybe he might have been wearing UFO or something like that. Always been in Fox. Suzuki guy forever, aside from some seasons on KTMs and Hondas. But so many people wrote that guy off. So many people said he was done. And I wouldn't say rightfully so, but the journey that Ken went on between the arms and the immune system issues and the setbacks, on top of the fact that you have fresh talent being brought into the class every single year. 13 years into a pro, no, 14 years into a 450 career. Ken Roczen gets it done with a 450 Supercross championship. Kyle, I'll let you speak on it first, aside from my ramblings. I'm just proud of the guy. I loved seeing it. And yeah, it's just a great story.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only, like, I even had that conversation with some different people and, like, my dad and stuff. And you know, we all were like, you know, can you think of anybody else that had, you know, essentially the comeback story that Kenny has? And I mean, the go-to that everyone kind of runs with is Henry. But, you know, Doug broke his back, and 2.5 years later, 3 years later, he wins the outdoor title. But Doug was never at risk of not walking again when he did that, because he, you know, everything was fine other than just, you know, slamming the crap out of his vertebrae and his and all that when he crashed. But he was never at risk of losing a limb. You know, he never got a serious infection from when he did that, and he did everything. You know, he got hurt and then won his championship inside of 3 years. This is a damn near losing your arm scenario, and then 9 years later you win the ultimate prize in motorcycle racing.
Yeah. Dave, what are your thoughts?
Dude, it was such a feel-good story. Like, all of us, I mean, we all know the Roczen story. And
if there's anybody that appreciates a feel-good story, it's Dave Drakes.
It's me, man. Yeah, it was just, it was something really, like, super cool, because I feel like the last couple of years, Ken's been pretty open and vulnerable, right? So, like, not just with the arm thing, but like, hey, just mentally being this age and going up against a lot of those variables you mentioned, where it's, you know, the crop of new talent, you know, the riding a bike that people think, you know, is archaic. You know, just trying to get over that notion that he fades in the second half of the season. Like, all these things, he's been really transparent. And he's just been really just I feel like hard work doesn't really speak to like all that he puts in. But yeah, to see that finally happen, it's super cool. And if we were talking, you know, a handful of years ago, right, before the injury, to say, you know, Ken Roczen's going to win a Supercross championship, we would have been like, yeah, no duh, dude, he's probably going to win 10. But the crash, the, you know, changing teams, the uphill battle, the, you know, just getting aging every season and having the new guys come in, like you mentioned, just all of that culminating to like a championship. And it's really, you will be hard pressed to find somebody that doesn't find some sort of inspiration or feel something from that, right? Nobody is like, number one, I don't like Roczen. Also, nobody's like, I'm kind of like in the middle of it. I really don't really kind of whatever. It's cool. Everybody is like, dude, that is so freaking awesome.
Well, and you know, to add on to that, you know, what makes that more evident is the fact that Hunter stuck around for the trophy presentation.
Oh, class act. Class act.
Yeah, we got to.
I mean, Hunter, did he want that title? Absolutely. But he, more than anybody else, since he lost that title by three points, he, more than anybody else, has the appreciation for what Kenny had to go through the last damn near decade. Yeah. And I mean, is he bummed? Sure. But if there's anybody that he is okay to lose that title to, especially after everything he's gone through, it'd be Kenny. And I can't, I challenge somebody to find me a rider in that paddock that goes in the other direction on that mentality.
100%. And you know, there's also one thing that like we all have to give credit to Hunter Lawrence. Like Kenny had to ride dang near perfect to beat that kid. It's not like it was like, oh, some guy had to like, you know, pull out all the stops, and you had to, you made Ken Roczen, the legend, have to ride the best he possibly could to beat you. That's something to hang your hat on, man. Like not only, class act, all other stuff, but Ken Roczen had to pull out all the stops to be able to beat you for a championship. That's pretty badass, man. Honestly, like that's something, that's an accolade in itself.
And both riders had so much pressure bestowed upon them as they rolled into this particular, like down the stretch here. You had like so many people looking at Hunter Lawrence, the brother of Jet Lawrence, a guy who's already won this championship, the older brother, the guy who literally led his family over to the States, got him the opportunity. A lot of people wanted to see that sort of come to fruition. And with that comes a lot of pressure. And same thing with Kenny. There's as many as there's people who were wanting to see him get it done. The same amount of people were like, come on, Kenny, you gotta get it done. And the weight of the world gets on your shoulders that way. I was really impressed with Ken. Let's talk a little bit about how the race unfolded. I was talking to my girlfriend sort of like what I thought was going to happen. And honestly, I thought that Hunter was going to get a great startup. I was going to get the whole shot. Yep. And that if Kenny had any chance of winning the race, he would have to take the lead right away. But he'd have to race away with it. He didn't do that. He grabbed the lead and he found a sustainable pace that in a way, it actually kind of flipped the chessboard on Hunter. We were like, I'm going to put the pressure on you now. It was a very difficult track to pass on. I'm going to keep you right behind me. And the guys who are right on your ass are going to be knocking on the door, and I'm hoping for a mistake. Mm. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, like, if, like you said, it was pretty much a 99% conclusion that Hunter was going to get that whole shot.
Yeah.
The fact that Kenny didn't get a great jump coming out of the gates, but luckily, like, nobody pinched him, and then when they got into that first corner, he just left it on. And for him to get into second, and Hunter saw him there, Hunter could have made his life miserable right then and there. But the fact that he was respectful about it and allowed that race to go on, and then 3 seconds later, he gets boxed out and you know, not essentially game over. But, you know, Kenny also said in post-race interviews, like, he had more, but he knew if he tried pushing it, Hunter was going to match him.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenny said this as much. Hunter's that good of a rider. I mean, Kenny says this. And that's 100% true. And Hunter showed us all year long that he's that good of a rider, save for those few random mistakes that ultimately cost him this whole deal, especially, you know, at the 2/3 mark of the season. Like, he essentially wore Hunter down, mm-hmm. but he did it from being ahead of him. And that's, it doesn't matter if it's Hunter, Jet, Ricky, Chad, James, whatever. When you wear somebody down being in front of them, that's hard to do. Like, it's easy to be the guy behind putting all the pressure on. But when you make everything happen the way it needs to be and you mentally break somebody while you're already leading the race, that's hard to do.
Yeah, no, it was really, really impressive to see. Ken just like, he was so consistent. The track itself, I don't think was the most technical track in the world. Like I said, I thought it was very difficult to pass on. I think evidence of that was just like a couple of guys that got really, really good starts. Who was I thinking of? Was it Gordon? Gordon was out front of, I think it was a heat race, and he just stayed there. And I think it was Davies that was behind him. And it was like, not that Davies was like trying to push him out of the way, but like, you have a rookie, and of course, Davies is only a second year guy, but he's looks like so far to be one of those generational talent guys. There wasn't a lot of separation there. And that sort of really plays into the hands of a guy like Kenny, who is just so damn consistent. He can put those laps together lap after lap after lap. And, unfortunately, like having to be that consistent is essentially what was what won him the title and what, caused it to unravel for Hunter. Dave, say stuff.
No, yeah. No, I'm, it's hard to disagree with either one of you guys about this. Like,
it's because we're right.
Essentially, it's the first time I've heard you be that right that consistently.
Oh, stop.
I think like what Kyle said, like it's really, really difficult to do what Kenny did, to be that mentally, wise. You know what I mean? And understand that there's not only is there a scenario A, B, and C, but to know in real time when it changes from C to B, or, you know, when they're doing their A and you have to counter with something else. Like, I feel like there's a lot of that going on. And just that's where Kenny's just being a grizzled vet. You know what I mean? We don't talk about that enough. We talk about it a lot in terms of like Eli Tomac and stuff like that, but Kenny's been around the block too, and he kind of knows a lot of the tricks. This is not his first championship by any means, and the guy is an absolute animal, but like to see that kind of like that chess play, that was really, really cool. And like, I did notice the start too, and it's really funny because all the three of us, like, I noticed that too. Like once the gate dropped, I'm like, dude, it's obviously going to be, even before the gate dropped, it's going to be a Honda. Like, of course Hunter's going to get out front, dude. He's unstoppable in the, you know, and, off the gate and stuff like that. And, to watch him almost have like, his game plan looked a little bit different. Normally Hunter's like pretty good, but he can come through from like, you know, fourth up to first or whatever. But to be that aggressive and to get up front and give us a show of like him and Kenny from like the second turn on. Oh man, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, and also on top of all that, for Kenny, he puts a big old exclamation point on it. So happy for the team, so happy for Dustin Pipes and Larry Brooks, everybody, like Billy Hartle over there, who took time away from the sport to focus on his dealership, now back at the races. Being a race mechanic, Dave, you know all about that. Not easy work whatsoever. It's incredible. I think it was an amazing story, from beginning to end. I'll let both of you guys, put a bow on this and we'll move on to the next one. But, I love to see it. So glad that, regardless of what happens forward in Ken Roczen's career, he's essentially won everything that you can win, aside from a 450 title over in Europe. And I think he can retire happily, even if he doesn't get that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the advantage that Kenny had the other night was the fact that if he lost it, if he didn't win the title and Hunter won it, he's like, his mentality is, I've already gone through the biggest shit storm of my life. Like anything from here on out, I'm good. Like I've come back. I've won races. I've been in the conversation. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I've come back from damn near the worst thing you could possibly ever come back from. And his, you know, as far as guys that actually come back, I'd say that probably is the worst thing you can come back from. At least, in recent memory, that's the worst thing that anybody can come back from. But yeah, like he stamped his career with that. I mean, the career was stamped anyway. We know that. It's not like it's not like him winning this championship defines his career by any means. But yeah.
No, this is just extra icing on top.
Oh yeah, for sure. And as far as Suzuki goes, I mean, it was their first title since 2010.
Yeah.
And yeah, all those guys. I mean, like I saw the photos and the video clips at the rig after everything was finally all said and done and the press release and everything. And you know, all the Suzuki people are there that have been there for so long. And I mean, Chris Wheeler was Suzuki before Kenny was even born. I saw him in some of those photos. And, you know, the VP of Suzuki from Japan was in there, and he revved it up a couple of times before he finally put the kibosh on it before they blew the engine up. The engine that Jamie and Dave Dye put together that helped out a ton, apparently. But it's just, it's feel good all around. And like you brought up, Brad, like Larry, one, being cancer free in enough time to actually make it to that race.
It's so beautiful. Like, I love it. I love it.
Well, and like Ricky kept saying, even though he kept saying it wrong, you couldn't script it any better. You couldn't write the script any better. If you took this season on its face, Kenny in his, you know, just in 17 races, Larry's aspect in the 17 races, like that movie's been written a million times.
Mm. Right.
When you aggregate over the course of 15 years, let alone the last 9 years, when you aggregate all that, nobody's going to write that movie script. And so I think
absolutely.
And that makes this the perfect, just like, and I mean, you and I texted the other day, like, and I said this, I'm like, if they don't make a movie on this story right here in the next 10 years, 15 years, that's a disgrace to not only Kenny, but to the sport and everything that we love about it, because that is the ultimate, you know, holy shit, this is amazing moment.
Yeah, and all the and the people and the characters, like it literally, like you said, it says it writes itself. If you took this script or the how it all played out for Ken Roczen and showed it to a movie exec in Hollywood, they'd be like, first of all, this is like too much hardship. This person, I don't know if anyone would continue on after most of the things that Ken Roczen went to. It's almost too far fetched. And that's just how beautiful it is that you have all those elements coming together. You have the first time an independent team has won a championship since, I believe that was it San Manuel with Chad in 08?
With Chad in 08.
Chad in 08, which, oddly enough, Larry Brooks is also on the podium for that particular race.
Well, and that team had more help from the manufacturer than what this team did.
Oh yeah, this is
way more help.
Honestly, like for me, like Larry Brooks gets a ton of credit with this. I'm just so damn proud of Dustin Pipes and the work that they have put into that. Tireless hours and the negotiations with sponsors and building this team and continuing to cultivate it and take it worldwide and win championships and turn the program that they started with Henry Miller and Seven Deuce Deuce and turn it into what was on the top step of the podium, winning the premier championship in dirt bike racing.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I have nothing but respect for Dustin and everybody over there. They should be incredibly proud of what they've created. And and then they got rewarded for it with a championship.
You know, one last thing as far as just the whole Suzuki aspect of this. Like, I was talking to my dad about this the other day. One thing that I hope, and it probably won't happen, but one thing that I would love to see happen out of all this is a proven fact that you don't need a 100% brand new bike with the latest and greatest technology. So can every other manufacturer, can all the 6, 7, 8 other, however many other manufacturers stop with the quote unquote innovation and new tech and everything and leave shit alone? Because we've advanced these bikes as far as we're going to advance them. Leave them alone and bring the price point down so we can get more bikes back in, because the motorcycle market, as far as new bike sales go, is falling down tremendously. Oh, it's going off the cliff.
The used bike market is ripping, though.
This is how we right this ship and just leave it alone, lower the price point on all these bikes, since any one of us can go into a Suzuki dealership right now and buy a brand new off-the-shelf 450 for under $8,000.
Yeah.
And be 99% competitive.
I would say 100% competitive.
Yeah.
Out of us three, there is nothing on that motorcycle that is holding either one of us back. I will never push an RMZ, a 2018 RMZ to its absolute limit. I'll never do it. I could quit my job tomorrow and focus only on racing dirt bikes. I will never push a 2018 RMZ to its absolute pinnacle. And that can be said for about 99% of people who swing a leg over a dirt bike ever, period.
100%. I thought about that the other day and like, what does this mean for the future of the sport with Kenny winning? And Kyle brought up a phenomenal point, but like, what is it? What does that mean? Not only for like, yeah, kids see him winning and like, yeah, I don't really need the best bike. Yeah. What does that look like for bike sales? What does that look like for people who are holding on to their bikes a little bit longer and not getting the latest and greatest? What does that mean for the mental game of moto? Because Ken talked about, how it was more of a mental battle than anything physical and how he had to really work on his mental side as well as the physical training on the bike. Like, how does that change? And like when I noticed that he gave like 99% of like the credit towards, you know, his mental prowess, mental strength, I was like, man, is this going to be like another transition in the sport? Almost like when Stu started scrubbing and like there was like this new way to ride, this new way to look at the track, this new way to view moto. Is this going to be like that next catalyst that like sparks change? And like now people are going to start focusing on maybe not so much getting the newest and greatest EFI electric star, you know, unobtainium bike, but more like, oh, I'm going to spend that money on a mental coach, or I'm going to spend that much money on, you know, finding somebody to help me with gratitude work. Like you mentioned, am I going to, you know, not put so much emphasis on one aspect versus the other? Like, what are people going to take away from that? And like, not only that, but kids seeing Kenny go down and come back from adversity, does this sort of change people's mindset on like motocross careers and how long they can go on, you know, people's perspective on when to call it quits in the sport or when to call it quits after a certain thing. So there's a lot of different effects I think that can take place from Kenny winning. Not only is this an incredible story that we all love, but I feel like he's changed the game in ways that we're not going to see quite immediately, but I think there was a little bit of a shift when we all saw that, because we're all touched by this, because we all can pull something from it. I think this is going to be one of those quote unquote defining moments in moto.
I agree. And I think maybe the first thing that will change, if anything, on the mental coaching side of things is a bunch of motocross coaches that will add mental coach to their Instagram profile and start charging for that to unsuspecting moto parents going forward, probably. Because if you can solve athletes being head cases in the sport of motocross, then have found plutonium by accident.
100%.
Somebody got Chase's number?
Yeah.
Jeez. Oh, goodness.
I hate being Osborne. Like that, but I mean,
Zach Osborne's online one.
When it's multiple years in a row, like, come on. I mean, I'll get all credit to him for winning.
He won.
Which makes the whole thing, especially the last 18 months, 24 months, just all the more puzzling.
Yeah.
Do you think he ends up staying with Cowie? Do you think he tries to exit and go somewhere else? And if he does go somewhere else, who would take him at this point?
I think Saturday night just ruined him trying to get out.
That was the worst thing that could have happened. They're like,
now in 6 months, sure. But right now, no. Because that just makes it look even worse than it already does.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's enough situations where Kawasaki has been known to be not flexible about the motorcycle, hard to deal with, this, that, and everything. Enough athletes, and like basically anybody who loses championships, they're going to say like, oh, they didn't do enough for me, or this, that, and the other thing. But it's like, enough riders cry wolf. You're like, oh, what's the problem? Like, what's the real deal here? But the reality is that there is some credence to this. You've got Jorge Prado, who had an absolute season from hell in 2025, comes back on a KTM and is like, I don't care who you are, that guy was a completely different guy this year. That guy could go hit whoops. Like, fastest qualifier, he was never going to be fastest qualifier on a Kawasaki. That was never happening.
He's winning races next year.
Oh, hell yeah, he's winning races next year. Yeah. Like, even with Jet Lawrence in the lineup, by the way.
Yep.
It's definitely, I think there's going to be some changes over at Team Green in order to sort of right the ship, because it's about people. It's about people, and obviously, like, they need to have a top flight machine. I think it's a good motorcycle. I think the right people being around it, and to be able to work with the riders, and like, I think they've, like, you look at what Star Racing has done with the facility and the people, and like, you don't have to go back and forth between Florida and California. It's all in one time zone. It's all in one area. They're going to different tracks, but for the most part, like, cause isn't the goat farm, like, just down the street from, club and all that fun stuff?
Not club, but goat farm, MTF, GPF.
Yeah, it's Southern, all right there.
There's five. I mean, they're all within a half hour's drive of each other.
Right. And like, that's that whole program, like, that situation, that environment has taken California, baked California supercross tracks and said, no, that you can shove that up your ass. Like, that's not how to win championships anymore.
You know, 100%. When it comes to the whole Cali situation, like, I look at about four different directions, or, you know, whatever word you want to use, as far as like, where does the blame pie go on this? At least let's just keep it within this year or the last, you know, two seasons. Does it go more towards Chase and Jorge? Does it go more towards? And before I finish the thought, I want to preface this by saying, if anybody from Kawasaki listens to this or watches this, because I know a lot of those guys in, you know, different parts of Kawasaki, I'm not coming after anybody. I'm asking the question because the evidence has been in front of us the last 2 years. So finishing the thought, does it go towards the riders? Does it go towards Chase and Jorge? Does it go towards Dan Fahey? Does it go towards Oscar Weirdeman? Does it go towards Kawasaki Japan? Like, where are we? How can we change so many variables here and end up with the same result for 2+ years? Like, who's responsible at the end of the day for this?
Right. So the question is this two bad years, or is this a reoccurring problem that, like, is going to have, because Kawasaki, like, people don't really realize it because you had so many guys, like, you just had a number of guys winning on that motorcycle between Ricky Carmichael to Ryan Villopoto to Eli Tomac. Like, they had lights out, like legendary talent on their motorcycle for the better part of 15 years, outside of maybe a couple of years here and there where they didn't have the guy. But, like, they've sort of changed the narrative of, like, the team isn't making the rider right now. The rider is having to make up a lot of shortcomings for the team, it seems like.
It seems that way. Yeah. And like, I've never tested a factory bike. I'm not a technician or an engineer, and I won't pretend I am. But
Dave pretends to be one.
I do a good impersonation.
I'm not a doctor. I stayed up, but I stayed at Holiday Inn Express last night. But when it comes to any of these riders, I don't care who it is, if it's Chase, Hunter, Jet, you know, go back 20 years, Ricky, I've never heard of this. Maybe it's something to think about. I don't know. But when you switch brands, tell me if this makes any sense to you guys. Does it make any sense to start riding for maybe two weeks or even a week, if that's all it takes, riding a bone stock bike? If you need to change the spring rate internally just to make it fit your weight,
spring rate, set the sag,
to run a bone stock bike to figure out how it reacts as it's built, since we're on the production rule, and then go from there. I have never heard of that one time, unless something is going so catastrophically wrong mid-season.
Yeah, that's always the last resort.
Right. Why don't you make that the first step, since that is the thing that you have to work from? But you're comparing a factory KTM to a factory Cowie, or a factory Honda to a factory Yamaha, without knowing how the bike is supposed to react.
Right. Well, a lot of that happens with the fact that, like, hey, sorry, we're not going to bother doing a baseline test with a completely stock motorcycle we're going, like, regardless of how you feel about this, we're putting X-Trigs on, or we're putting XYZ on the bike. So it doesn't even matter how it feels. that company's cut us such a check that like, you're not going to run this. So I think that's really what it comes down to, is that like, there's in a lot of the team's approach is that like, there's no getting around using specific components because those companies have paid to be on the motorcycle. So we're not even going to let you feel what it is without it, because you're not going to ride without it, because those guys write us a check.
That's definitely an interesting take. I feel like that is a lot of it, but I think a lot of times that the teams, they put in so much time and effort to get, you know, a baseline OE showroom floor bike to the factory level that they almost want like a just consistent ROI on that bike, like, or their efforts, right? So it's we put all that time in. I want to, you know, let's just keep using this over and over and over again, so our return keeps getting that more exponentially big, right? But I think there's a lot to what Kyle said. There's a lot of validity in that, and a lot of benefit in that, and starting with that showroom baseline and just understanding the motorcycle, understanding why this is different than the previous one I was on. What's the best way to ride this bike? How was it designed? You know, what was it made to do?
The factory, is it balanced? How do I get it balanced?
Exactly. And then, we all know, like, there's riders that like, oh, I typically like a more of a stink bug feel, or I like a really stiff front end, or I like, you know, a bike that does this or that, right? We all have our quirks, you know? I think you start introducing that like down the road. Like, yeah, I know you like this setup or blah. Go try here, and then we'll start to implement a little bit of this as we go along. And I think that would do a lot. But yeah, having that be the last resort is just, it's a little baffling. I think the only way that wouldn't be necessary is if you're going from like, yeah, I was at club, no, I'm going to Star, or I was at MX6 team, now I'm going to PC. It's like, really, it's relatively same platform. There are nuances here and certain things that are different here and here, obviously, but other than that, I'd say, yeah, what Kyle said is really going to be beneficial to people if they tried that. You know,
I mean, the perfect guy that we can test, that sounds like we're going to have to test for this going into next year, is going to be, well, I mean, a couple of guys, RJ and Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those guys are looking for a place. I guess that's the next topic of conversation to move to. Husqvarna, the manufacturer's not closing its doors yet, waiting for a press release on that. But from a racing standpoint, factory Husqvarna is kaputsky. There will not be that team. It won't be a Rockstar team. It won't be a Red Bull team. It won't be a Monster team. It won't be a team next year at all. That leaves some guys kind of holding the bag and kind of like get caught. Kind of hanging dry a little bit here. Guys like Daxon Bennett, guys like Ryder D. But then obviously, yeah, you have RJ and Malcolm. Are they carrying Malcolm or RJ forward, or what's the deal with both those guys? Are they both up and they're both gone?
They're both gone, yeah.
So RJ already knew, I guess, from the information that I got earlier today, actually. RJ knew he wasn't getting re-signed because they didn't have the budget. Initially.
Mm.
So he already knew. Malcolm had another year left on his contract, so that caught him way off guard. Casey's also out.
And right. Then, Cochran. Cochran.
The Husky support is all going to AEO, so Dax and Ryder D are fine.
Hmm.
So they're going to ride AEO Husqvarnas?
Yes.
Okay. I don't hate that. Are those guys going to have to ride in California though?
I don't know, but who knows? But that's they're switching. So Huskies, you know, they're not doing the factory effort. And I knew there was going to be a change. I wasn't expecting that, but I had heard rumblings for the last however many months. I can't remember exactly when I first heard this, that Rockstar was going to be gone regardless. I did hear that multiple times.
I'm not surprised to see that at all, because like, ever since, was it Pepsi that bought them in 2018 or 19? Basically the budget for that product has just like,
They've put, I mean, Pepsi's put their focus into other newer brands like Bang and all those. I mean, they kind of let Rockstar just kind of fade to the wayside on that whole structure.
Yeah, like the whole infrastructure that was built around boosting up the Rockstar vodkas and the Rockstar that there used to be basically you had a three-headed monster of energy drinks that really had everyone by the balls, which was of course Red Bull, Monster, and Rockstar. And those two Rockstar brand honestly at one point was heavier player in that than Monster was.
Well, remember
and
when they
Monster
were the title
blew past
the outdoors.
That's right. Yeah. And Loretta's.
Yeah. US Nationals, Loretta's, the Canadian Nationals.
Canadian Nationals. That's right. Yeah. I guess at some point, someone does the math and it doesn't make sense.
I think the Supercross and I think the whole motorcycle aspect is the last. Other than maybe a little bit left in rally car, but I think that's pretty much all that's left of Rockstar Energy as far as even sports go. Cause I don't see them sponsoring any kind of extreme athletes anymore.
No, I don't even see them on skiers or snowboarders. Yeah. None of it.
Exactly. Wow. I mean, those are all Monster, save for the few Red Bulls, but most of them, it's Monster anymore with that kind of stuff.
Where would you guys like to see RJ and Malcolm land?
Good question.
For next season, what makes sense for them to go to if not, you know, on a
I know both of them talked to Cowie at Salt Lake City.
Okay.
I think it would be rad to see Malcolm back at Cowie, and then he could do edits with his two stroke. You know, he has one. Honestly, Kawasaki, everything is forgiven and undone if Kawasaki comes out with those goddamn two strokes.
I'm gonna ask again.
You can't fumble that
this weekend. Cowie personnel is gonna be there. I'm going to ask again when the hell we're gonna see this two stroke.
You can't fumble fuck something more than the release of that. Like, other than the guy from Dust Moto, who I think is just completely full of shit.
Oh, Colin, dude, he's such a nice guy.
How? The guy took money from people to buy the first 50 in 2023. He's a nice guy. Well, that guy has people's fucking money.
The product's pretty. It's pretty cool. I will say
it's pretty cool. He hasn't released shit.
I think it's coming. From what I hear from him,
pictures of the same one bike.
I think it's coming.
They put some W wheels on a fucking bicycle and threw it No, come on. You are full of shit.
Have you
seems
tried
like
one out
a
yet?
Nice guy, but that guy's still full of shit.
Jesus.
Donald, in the last time, has come out with an e-bike already.
No kidding. We're going to get the new fucking Guns N' Roses album before Dust Moto comes out with a fucking dirt bike.
Dude, I did try that Bunnell, and I went to Eric Perrinard's place at Daytona Supercross. Dude, that bike is freaking sick.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's going to be like...
Oh, dude, it is it was freaking great. I could.
And you know all about the electric
bicycles.
What's that?
You ever been on one of their e-bikes?
I haven't. No. So I know their VP, and we were talking a little bit about a few things, and he was like, "Hey, we got this new bike coming out. Like, come fly down, check it out." And really, I heard of their. They're like their mountain bike set up a little bit, but I've never had the opportunity to ride one. So like I knew of, you know, they crush it on the pedal side. But man, yeah, I was really impressed with the e-motos, man. They were freaking great.
I haven't seen one of those up close yet, but I've seen their bicycle and those are heavy bastards. They brought a couple of them to GNCC last year because they've been doing stuff with Ryan Sipes and now his son Jack and everything.
Jesus,
those things are heavy, but they're good.
Yeah.
And now they've got a motorbike, and apparently them having one out in the last 12 months has really upset Brad.
Which the Dust Moto guys or the other guys? Honestly, the only problem with the Dust Moto guys, that guy has somebody's fucking money. If I gave you, I think they sold 50 bikes at half off. He was asking for $4,000 on just picked an $8,000 MSRP out of the fucking sky. If a guy had my $4,000, I'd fly to his fucking house and break his legs right now.
Oh, jeez.
I'm dead serious.
Did you give him money?
No. Because I
say, like, this feels personal.
No, it was like I'm for legitimate business people.
Money from the third grade.
What's that? Yeah, maybe, I don't know. Like that is just that is what those guys have done so far is the most disingenuous. Like this is like a black eye for all things like off road. Is they've taken money from people and deposits on bikes. They haven't done a fucking thing aside from like basically make it so that they can make a living off of this thing. I guarantee you they probably got some sort of government subsidy for starting an EV company. Guaranteed there's some of that bullshit going on. And they haven't done it. They just keep putting out the same pictures or the same renderings of the bike that doesn't exist.
You got to get Cone on the show and talk about him.
For him to explain to me why it takes 3 years to make almost no changes to a bike that looks like a lot of fun, but there's not more than two of them in existence, and he took deposits on 50 goddamn motorcycles.
Mm.
So,
yeah, you gotta have
either I'm full of shit or that guy's full of shit. There's like,
I think for the sake of Brad's health, we need to change topics. He's about to blow up.
I think 100%. I gotta say, Kyle,
We gotta get you to fan this guy off, man.
We're gonna talk about the media changes on next week's podcast because we don't have time for that. Because I literally have to leave for hockey in like 15 minutes. Mm. But I wanted to finish off this podcast. We're gonna totally just steal a segment straight out of Pardon My Takes book because we're essentially in the off season of Supercross. They do this during the off season of all things sports. We're doing a Mount Rushmore of 250 Supercross racers. I don't care what they did as a 450 athlete. 250 Supercross only. We're going to do it snake draft style. So Dave, you get to lead off. That means you're also waiting until pick number 6 to take your second guy. So choose wisely. I think I know where you're going.
You do.
We are going to include 125s for those who argue.
So this is just 125 and 250 effort.
150, right? Yes.
Okay.
125 and 250 Supercross. Their body of work in that class, I think it's kind of prudent to do as one of the best competitors the class has ever seen in Hayden Deegan puts an exclamation point on his 250 career with yet another championship. Dave Drakes, you have the first pick. Who are you taking?
I think you know who I'm taking, and this is because it's undeniable the impact they had in the sport, and not only them, but them compared to the competition and how they changed things. You got to go JS7, dude. You got to go to the 259, James Stewart, and 125.
Fair enough. I'll make it easy as well. I'll go with Ricky Carmichael for my first round, first pick. It's the second pick, I suppose, in the draft, but give me Ricky Carmichael.
Smart.
All right, then I guess my first one would probably are we counting the last few years too?
This last Saturday, night. I suppose.
I'm not gonna make it that easy. I'll go RV.
One title for RV though. You're gonna take RV with your first pick.
I'll go RV. He should have had more.
He should have had the 08 title, but that's good.
He should have had the 08 title.
Dude, he was such a beast, dude, on that bike.
Dude, that 07 Donations. I know we've talked about it multiple times, but that 07 Donations.
We haven't talked about it enough.
I mean, that's moto porn if I've ever seen it.
Oh, and Kyle, yeah. This goes back to like the old school talk that we kind of had of like the 07, 06 era.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just
that life was just better. And it's not just because we were in our teens.
No, and it was like Villopoto. Like if you watch him on the 250F, I've never seen anybody ride like that. His style, he gelled with that bike. That was when Cowie just got their stuff together with that bike, and it was just light years ahead of anyone else's bike. It just such a good time, man. Oh, if I could go back in time,
oh yeah,
I would do it.
Kyle, your first pick around two.
So if I went Villopoto. I think I might go back even farther, honestly, because this guy was just good on a 125. I'm going to go Fonseca.
Oh, that's good.
Ernie. Ernie.
You got to respect Fonseca.
Yep.
Two-time champion.
The only guy that has a longer win streak than Fonseca is Ricky.
Yep. Let me quickly steal a page out of your book with a two-time champ. Let me go with it's off in left field, maybe a little bit. Give me Grant Langston.
Man, that is not one that I had on the card at all, and it really should have been.
Both coasts. Mm. One of the very few both guys coasts. That have won both coasts.
Yep. Mm.
Grant Langston. Dave, you got two picks now.
I'm going to have to go I'm going to have to go Webb. He had a super dominant run on that bike, and that's just when Star started getting, you know, their stuff together, and the Yamaha started really.
Yeah, he won the championships. J Mart didn't.
Yep. So yeah, you could have gone either way for me, J Mart or him, and like, dude, they cleaned house for a while.
Hmm. And then you had a second. Your next pick. You get two.
I'm gonna go. This is going to be unconventional because they didn't win super often, but they were always in the conversation for every single gate drop. I loved watching Josh Grant on his Honda.
You're going with a guy with no titles?
I'm just saying watching this guy ride. I'm sorry. I know I prefaced it and told you he didn't get the titles. Watching him ride that 250.
He got a title. He got one title.
He didn't get a 250 title.
Supercross,
no titles.
Yeah, no
Josh
title.
Grant?
Mm-mm. Josh Grant, no titles. Nope.
But like,
I think he might have led the points the year that Millsaps won in 06.
Yep. But watching.
But East Coast, he did not win that title.
Watching him when I was a kid, I watched him at Southwick, and he literally held the gas on, no clutch, no brake, for about four corners wide open up and down these hills. And I will never forget that. And like, that was, he has to go on my board, man, for just somebody that rode that the heck out of that bike.
Oof, so I had a funny story from years ago. Remember, the year at High Point when Ricky, James, Chad, and Grant were doing the tunnel jump into the staircase?
Yes.
So I guess the story on Grant was that was a $5,000 bet that he wouldn't do it the first lap of practice.
I could see him doing that. Josh Grant, my money.
Guess who the bet was with?
Chad.
No. Naveen.
Oh, I could see that with Naveen.
His own mechanic.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I did a podcast with Naveen like 10 years ago.
Next time you ever talk to Naveen, ask him that story.
I'm going to text him right now. all right. Who'd you go with, Dave?
Josh Grant. I'm going to get a lot of hate for that. I know.
I don't know if you're going to get hate for it. I think there's just going to be some people who are like, you left some people on the board. I'm going to go with two-time East Coast Supercross 250 champ, Justin Barcia.
It's a good one.
If you ever think of somebody who like really made a 250 dance in Supercross, Justin's one of them.
Barcia got it. He got that bike flat, man.
Yeah, man. Kyle, you get two. Those are your last two picks.
All right, the first one, it has to be obvious, and the fact that this is pick number what? 7, 8?
8, I believe.
The fact that this was the 8th pick out of the entire list of riders that we had to choose from, because unless I'm just completely stupid and miss where either one of you guys said it, MC.
Boom. I was waiting for that. McGrath, two-time champion.
Yeah.
There's a lot of two-time champions on the 125 you could pick from. What's your last pick, Kyle?
I'm torn between two guys three titles between both of them.
Okay.
And they just, especially like kind of Dave alluded to earlier, just the initial PC four stroke run. So I think I'm going to go that.
Unrivaled. Unrivaled.
Where are you going?
I'm going hot sauce.
You're going hot sauce. I knew it. God damn it.
Yeah, he had a run, man. Gosh, was anything nicer than those bikes back then?
No, nothing. I had one.
Even the year he won his title, what was that, 05?
You won two titles. He won
in 03 and 04.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Or 04 and 05.
Yeah.
Yeah, even the old, like, the 05 KX250 was touted as really not that great of a bike, but man, did they look nice. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. What's his name? Grant or Greg Hitchco? Yeah, Greg Hitchco.
Oh yeah, he's got a build. Yeah.
He's got an 04 or an 05 he did a great job with that.
Yeah.
My last pick, this is a difficult one because like you could go with this guy or you could go with a 2-time champ. I hate to leave him off the list, but I'm going to go, and he probably should have had 2 championships, but he crashed too much. I'm gonna go Travis Pastrana.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm going to go TP. And, TP 199 is, that's who I'm going with.
Solid.
And, you get to finish it off. Dave Drakes, you get to pick first, but you also have to pick last.
I got to go with, probably one of the coolest, the person that gave us one of the coolest 250, titles that went down to the Little Wire. I got to go Zach Osborne.
Zach Osborne. I was waiting for Osborne to come off the
board. It was going to be him or Trey Kennard because those two guys were just, they're killers. But, Osborne just, dude, how often do we talk about that in a year? His, you know, was that 17? Oh, 17.
Yeah.
Pretty much anytime I want to smile.
Yeah. That whole night is the only thing that I can honestly think of that compares to this past Saturday as an entire night.
I think I might agree with that, actually.
Between both main events.
Yeah. Bring the finale back to Vegas, though. Salt Lake City sucks ass.
Well,
and like start the race at night.
Yeah, well, I will say that,
of whether it's in Salt Lake, Vegas, day, night, whatever, can we please do one shootout and make it a big money race? Again, a big, like...
Yeah, they need to, like, put some cash into that. There's way too many people don't give a shit at the end.
Yeah.
Like, I get why they went to the three just so it makes them race. It actually makes them race since points are on the line. But can we please figure out a way to just do it once and build that anticipation again? And, I mean, give 250 grand to the winner or something. I mean.
Feld Entertainment will do whatever is cheapest.
I do miss. We sound like we're like 1,000 years old, by the way, guys. Yes. But because we keep going back in the past. But yeah, there was something to be said. And I'm thinking like, what was it, 02 or 03 when Stu lined up with Reed and it was like 1E versus like 1W or whatever. And like,
in 02?
Yeah, Matt, like think about that excitement. Think about the excitement we felt.
Yeah. I think honestly that, I think it would be better if you had, eight rounds on both sides, and then the 17th round doesn't count for anything aside from money.
That's what I'm saying though. It doesn't count for anything, but there needs to be a big pot there.
Yeah, but then also, why don't you just make it like the 250 class at the finale is an open class? You can, if you're a privateer who's been barely making mains, or you're out of the 450 championship, obviously. Yeah, you can go throw your hat in the ring and make some serious cash in the 250 class this weekend.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. Like imagine Kevin Moran's building up a 250 for the final race of the year.
Oh, dude, Kevin's dropping elbows on people, man.
Putting Deegs in
he's gonna
the
be an
cheap
animal.
Seats.
He's going to be an animal.
Think about all Cade Clayson comes back out of retirement just to race that.
Well, think about all the years when it was just the one showdown in Vegas. I mean, think about all the guys that didn't win titles that just came out and killed
Andrew Short.
Everybody. Mm. Yeah, Shorty. Nate Ramsey was one of them. Sipes won it one year.
That's right.
I know he didn't win the race, but like there for a few years, right in that 125 to four stroke transition. Sorby always got in the middle of that deal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Roncada. I know he won a title, but.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Oh my God. Ron was Roncada, just giving James everything he wanted in 04.
Gosh, come on.
So good.
Races in a row.
So two weekends later at Hangtown, gave him everything he wanted too. When James was wearing that absolutely gorgeous, the blue with the spider
throwback.
We're officially at the time where you can now throw back to that throwback year, and I'd be here for it. In fact, I believe Ken was wearing gear that he wore as a Fox athlete, like in 2011.
Oh.
Well, did you see the post that Josh Moseman put up of Michael wearing that gear from like 15 years ago?
Yeah, I think it was 09 or maybe 12, 11, something like 11, that. Yeah, it was like 11, right in that sort of, it's so funny because like that era of gear is when gear got really like messy and busy and polka dots and splash and whatever else. Mm-hmm. Not always remembered as like the most iconic era of gear. But then of course now, 15 years later, fuck, is that shit cool? All right, boys. So for those who are watching or listening at home and keeping track, Dave went with James Stewart, Cooper Webb, Josh Grant, and then two-time champ Zach Osborne. I went with Ricky Carmichael, Grant Langston, Justin Barsha, and the one, the only Travis Pastrana. And then Kyle's team, for the most part, went with Cowies. He went with, McGrath won his championships on Hondas. Villopoto, Ernesto Fonseca, Jeremy McGrath, and Hot Sauce Ivan Tedesco. For those, how many people in today's like moto media sphere, like if you said Hot Sauce to like a 17-year-old, do they know? They don't know.
No idea.
No chance. They know.
They have
who
a
that
better
is.
Idea
no
about chance. Ivan than they do about Fonseca.
Truth.
Yeah,
because of the Triumph connection. Boys, this is fun. Kyle, where can people keep track of all things going on with Kyle Wolf and Wolf Creative?
Just like that on Instagram at Wolf Creative Co. and same thing on YouTube with all the GNCC content.
Love it, brother. We'll have you on in about a week's time to talk some GNCC. And Dave Drakes, you're on social media. People can follow your regular account, but they probably want to follow the collective experience more than anything, which may be subject to change in 2027.
I'm not planning any changes, but at the Collective EX on Instagram, the collectivexp.com, come hang out and turn your passion into a career. Let us help you out. Hang out with cool people. Maybe we get Kyle Wolf into the program so I can see him more than once every couple of years. I can start bugging him at more races. That'd be fun. I'm looking forward to it. And, dude, I want to do another one of these because this is great. And I'm very grateful you let me pick Josh Grant as like my that's just for me to watch.
It's fine. I was going to go like all Cowies.
Yeah.
Cowies not winning shit aside from
I'll say in defense of Dave, Daytona 05.
Yeah, exactly. Dude,
he didn't win that race either, but Daytona 2005.
I'm so happy that you brought Kyle on when I'm on, dude, to like, cause we're all in the same era.
Yeah.
And it makes me miss Kyle more, but it just makes me so much more happy that like I got guys that understand me so much, dude.
I love it. I think we're on to something, boys. Appreciate everyone for listening to this episode. And we'll catch you next week. Sound good, boys?
Sounds good.
All right.